Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world, welcome to the show. This is the Millennial Millionaire Podcast, and I am your host, Stephen Cohen. This podcast is focused on bringing some of the wisest minds from across the globe to discuss concepts, strategies, and ideals that will lead them to be top performers in their respective industries and their lives. This show is for the millennials and millennials at heart to transcend their mindset, their health, and their income to the next level. We are so excited to have you on this journey with us. Welcome to the show. Yo, 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 Millennial Millionaires, welcome back to the show. Hope everyone's having a phenomenal end of their Q1. Today, we have two more special guests. These guys are some local legends out here in Las Vegas. We have Jesse and Landon Bokel, a.k.a. the Bokel Bros. They are real estate experts out here in the 702. Combined, they have hundreds of flips that they've done. They're the head trainers at Wealthy Investor. They've owned a real estate brokerage in the past. Their family, fun fact for you guys who are out here in Vegas, actually started the PT Pubs. And just some really cool locals out here that are crushing in entrepreneurship, real estate, and just super excited to finally have you guys on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us on. It took a little while to connect, but it's good to be here.
All great things take time.
Yep. Yes, sir.
Appreciate you guys coming on. It's funny. It's always fun for me to meet some locals in Vegas because, you know, a lot of people know about the 6 degrees of separation, but I feel like in Vegas, especially when you're around the same age demographic, it's really 3 degrees. Turns out we have a lot of mutual friends.
Absolutely.
Inside and outside of the entrepreneur content world. But for those that don't know who you guys are, give a quick little background of your story, how you got here, and we'll hop into it.
Sure. Happy to do that. So if you haven't figured out yet, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Landon.
We're the Bokel Brothers. And we officially started investing in real estate in this entire world in 2016. That's when we decided, hey, let's do something together. Let's buy a house and flip it. And that's where the first idea of starting this entire thing came from. And since then, since 2016, we've continued to grow year over year, added members to the team, skills to the toolbox, and for 500 flips later, here we are with an excellent flipping company that we're pretty proud of.
Yeah, been a hell of a run. You know, we've owned, like you said, brokerages in the past, so we owned the Bokel Group Real Estate. You know, I made decisions to shut that down a little while ago, which we could get into here later in the podcast. You know, our dads, you know, came out to Vegas back in, 1982 by themselves and started a little chain of bars called PT's Pub.
Heard
and
of
that's
them.
Really, yeah, I'm sure.
A little
sure
watering hole.
you know, I say that because that's really where we got our real estate love and our business acumen was from those two guys. So born and raised here in Vegas, we've been around it our whole lives.
No, I love some locals and super cool to see just like the city and how much is actually going on here in terms of sporting, in terms of events. You know, I have so many people on Vegas from the Vegas on the podcast and those that live here, they appreciate it, but not as much when you travel outside or from outsiders coming to Vegas can really appreciate it. What have you guys seen? I mean, you've grown up here. You know, you took some time. You said you've gone to California and other places. But seeing you guys grow up here, what have you seen the city turn into and where do you think Vegas is heading?
It's honestly, it feels like it's all happening in the last like 4 or 5 years. Because if anybody that's been here for more than, let's say, 20 years or lifers like we are for over 30 years, you probably remember the downturn. You remember 08, 09 when things just came to like a screeching halt. And then it was just a bloodbath of real estate in Las Vegas for a little while up until 2010 and 2011. If there's any perfect example of this, it's the Fountain Blue. Do you remember how long that sat just empty with nothing going on? That's what Vegas was for over a decade. And now it's really cool to see all of the various businesses and industries and events that are coming to town seemingly in the past 4 or 5 years more so. And I think my projection of where Vegas is going has totally changed because of those last 4 or 5 years. Way more is happening. I think Vegas is capable of way more than I ever thought it could be.
Yeah. And I mean, besides the excitement of, you know, being born and raised in Vegas, we never had any teams to root for professionally.
Nothing.
So the excitement of having the Knights and the Raiders and the A's coming to town, you know, being able to finally be a dedicated sports fan, which we've never been able to do, right? Obviously, business-wise, I mean, the amount of job growth it's created and, you know, what we see it doing for the city, you know, from a real estate expert stance, you know, absolutely just so much growth here. And, you know, it, being in real estate has been so much fun the last couple of years because of that.
Pretty good time.
Yeah. I mean, just the energy in the city, you know, whenever I travel other places or I've lived in a couple other places over the years, you can't really replicate the entrepreneurial hustler, just want to go after your goals and your dreams energy here. Do you guys think that is from the Strip? Is it from just the locals that are migrating here? Obviously, big cities have that ability to cultivate that. But what do you think that energy is that attracts so many high caliber entrepreneurs to 702?
Taxes.
State tax. No, state tax.
I mean,
that's
it's, good
point. I mean, it's a land it's a of opportunity. I really see Vegas as just like that land of opportunity. I mean, outside of the professional sports team and what's going on the Strip, I mean, you know, both North Las Vegas and, you know, off of like South Henderson, St. Rose area, if you're here in town, the amount of multi-million square foot industrial facilities, right? All the Amazon facilities coming into town. We got this new so-called Hollywood being built out in the Southwest, right? New local casinos being built up. I mean, it's just so much diverse opportunity where I think in the past, you know, more towards like the 08 times, Vegas was only built off tourism, only built off the Strip. But I think we've done such a good job insulating ourselves and our economy with this diverse industrial, you know, industrial warehousing and big shipment facilities and now sports teams and now Hollywood and everything else going on, which for me feels like we're insulated from any sort of major crash like Vegas felt back in 08 because we got hit one of the hardest in the country.
Fingers crossed.
No, 100%. I'm curious. So I was pretty young. I think we were all pretty young in 2007 and 2008. Mm-hmm. And obviously you guys are real estate experts and we're going to talk about, you know, flipping, wholesaling, investing, when to hold, all that good stuff. But I think a big reason why people either aren't interested in getting involved in real estate or they just don't know how, I think there is a fear of what happens if I lose money in real estate. And I think a lot of that fear is more of an irrational fear because maybe their parents had some property or they saw them grow up in that downturn of the market. And typically monkey see, monkey do when you're young, you know, the life cycle of how people think and how they go out and take action in the marketplace is sometimes dictated on how they were raised and what happened during that life cycle through their family. So can you guys touch a little bit on how do you actually lose money in real estate? And I know flipping is more of a active versus investing is more of a, you know, a passive. But what do people need to watch out for to avoid potentially losing money and over leveraging themselves when it comes to real estate?
There's a million things, but there's some top ones I think are great to at least share because they're more digestible. Whether you're buying a rental, you want to buy an Airbnb, you want to buy a house to renovate it and fix it up and flip it like we do. If you aren't incredibly good at valuing properties, if you don't know how to look at comps, come up with an ARV that is airtight, then you're going to have a hard time making money on any property at the end of the day because one of the most pivotal values that you could tie to that property would be incorrect or be wrong. Mm-hmm. And so everyone needs to start there is being able to identify areas and properties and comp it or find comparable sales to figure out what it's worth. That skill set alone goes into multifamily, rentals, Airbnbs, flips, anything you could possibly think of. But starting there is like a really good foundation.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to the mindset, right, you know, we're talking about, you know, our parents felt this disaster in 08, and now I'm scared to do anything that takes any risk because of what happened to them. Now, look, what happened in 08, you could have made great decisions.
Yeah.
But what happened to the economy happened, right? And we hope that that doesn't happen again to at that level anytime in the near future. But multi-billion dollar corporations couldn't evade that situation. And there's always a chance that stuff happens. But like Jesse said, if we're looking at the entry level, I want to get into investing. Are you going to lose everything you own in your life? The odds are very, very, very slim. Like when we talk about losing on transactions, we're talking about losing a little bit of money, right? If we go and borrow $300,000 to buy an investment, the chances of us losing $300,000 are very, very, very slim.
That's now, all of that money evaporating.
That's all of that money going away. And that's how people think is like, oh, yeah. I'm not going to take a $300,000 risk because what if I lose it all?
Yeah.
It's like, well, to lose it all would take extreme disaster. To lose $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 of it is possible. But is that going to end your career in investing? Most likely not.
Yeah.
100%. And I want to double click on what you said, Jesse, the skill set of finding deals and being able to comp.
Yeah.
So I don't even really consider myself a real estate investor. You know, I have some properties. I dabble, right? Solar is obviously how I make all my active income. And then I know from reading gazillions of books, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Grant Cardone, right? Put that into real estate.
Parlay that into a portfolio.
Yeah, exactly. So I've learned some things over the years. Yeah. I've done renovations. I've never done actual flips. Okay. But the one question that I always ask myself if I want to start segmenting more into the real estate world is your ability to find deals really dictates any type of vertical you want to do in real estate, right? Like you said, rather it's flipping, long-term holds, wholesaling, et cetera. What does it take to find a deal? What skill sets do you need? And what tips can you give people that maybe are part-time working on their fortune, but full-time have a job that they can't go all in like you guys do in real estate?
Just thicker skin. That's a fantastic question. I really think it boils down to something so, so simple, and that's thick skin. Mm. Because whether you want to go knock on doors like a wholesale investor and find someone who's in more of a situation where they need to sell, and you're trying to find that motivation to lock up that house and wholesale it, well, you're going to be told no 1,000 times before you knock on the door that says, yes, help me sell my house. If you want to send offers to homes that are listed on the MLS, those are ready to sell, all active, ready to go. We buy all of our flips from the MLS. If you want to send offers and go that route, you're also going to get 99 no's before you get one yes. You can do or be successful in any form of property acquisition. You just have to be used to and comfortable with going through all the no's before you get to the yes. And I think that's any property type, any avenue of acquisition. It's just what you need. You have to understand this game. Understand that my returns of success on my offers, whatever, are going to be low. And if I can just play that numbers game, I can do well in this. It's that simple. Most people don't want that. They want, especially a younger age group, they want instant gratification. They want money now. I don't want to wait, build a pipeline. I don't want to do the right things and have delayed gratification later. I want a deal now. I want to make 40 grand now. And it just doesn't always happen that way, you know?
It don't work that way.
It doesn't work that way. You have to be able to do the right thing, get told and over again, no, kick rocks, I'm not the one, until you get to that one. And then once you do, you realize, okay, I can just, for every 100 doors or every 100 offers I make, I get a deal. Let's just back out and do the math. How many deals do I want to do this week, this month, this year? Well, there you go. There's your answer.
Law of averages, reverse engineering.
Yeah.
Sounds like some simple stuff.
It really is.
It's a numbers game.
But I'm telling you, a lot of people our age and especially younger than our age, not hurting on any or hating on anybody, but they don't want to be told no. They don't want to put in the time, the effort, and the work. They're afraid of rejection. You know, yes.
Here's an example, a real life example of what we expect out of our team on a weekly basis. Our goal right now is to buy 10 to 12 properties a month on the flip side. Okay. 10 to 12 flips a month. Mm-hmm. To do that, for us and our team with our experience to buy 10 to 12 properties a month, we're submitting somewhere between 300 to 400 offers on the MLS, right? And that means we're getting rejected on hundreds of our team's being rejected hundreds of times a month. You know, agents are telling them to kick rocks. Sellers are yelling at us. Everyone's yelling at us, but they have to put in the volume to get the return of just 10 deals.
Yeah.
So you can imagine someone who may be doing it on their own without the experience and without the team, it just becomes a volume game, a numbers game. You know, if you're hitting the phones as an investor, even as a traditional real estate agent.
Yeah, too.
You're going to start with 1,000 cold calls a week to get one listing appointment or to get one potential investment. And eventually that's going to come down to 500 a week and then 250 and then 100. So you know every 100 calls I make equals a deal, but you don't start there. And that's where people give up is 1,000 to 1 ratio versus the 100 to 1 ratio.
Especially when you add in the fact that somebody new starting out isn't going to start out hitting the ground at that volume.
No.
So if I said every 100 offers you make, you're going to get a deal. But when that person starts, they're going to submit 2 offers a day. How long is it going to take them to get to their first deal? They're probably going to quit before they do. And that's just the reality of what happens.
Yeah. No, I think it's so interesting to me how, I forgot the exact stat. I think this was a couple of years ago, right after COVID, where there was literally more licensed real estate agents than home on the market.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you guys think there's so many real estate agents out there who maybe have sell a house, 2 houses, or maybe they're pretty successful at their job, but they never pivot into the investing side of things?
Yeah.
Whether that's wholesaling.
Being a real estate agent and working with buyers and sellers, other people, other clients, is a whole different world than I'm going to own something. I'm going to buy something, invest into it, modify it, change it, sell it high, make a profit. That whole framework of thinking is way different than who's ready to buy or sell you. Okay, I'll help you.
Right. And most agents start with family, friends, and a small sphere of influence, right? You know, the successful agents and, you know, the guys that I know that are doing, you know, $1 million a year plus in commission consistently are doing exactly what we just said. They're the guys who wake up and, you know, they're in the office and their fingers on the dialer 8 a.m. sharp every day. And you don't bother them until 10, 11 o'clock in the morning because they're calling every day, hundreds of people every day. And that's what gets them to the million. Most agents just have some family, have some friends, you know, and they really don't know a couple things. They don't know a lot about real estate, you know, so they need to educate themselves more. Since they don't know a lot about real estate, they're probably too scared to jump into the investment side because they don't want to take that risk. And traditional real estate's risk-free.
Yeah.
Investing has a risk to it, right?
On top of all that, the people you're saying that like hit the phones, that hold themselves accountable to doing high-level work are 1% of all real estate agents. So the reason why a lot of real estate agents don't jump into investing is because only 1% are actually making good money, enough to say, I should invest this money. The other 99% of real estate agents aren't making enough to go invest that money. They're just making enough to live.
That's a really good point, because if you think about it, it's really the only top 1-2% of any industry that starts making serious money. So it makes sense that that 1% from other industries would gravitate towards the real estate investing side, even if you're a traditional agent, because you don't have enough success, mindset, courage, right? You haven't done the inner work enough, which is why you're not receiving the compensation in order to take that risk to go out there and invest.
Right. I think it's 3% of the entire licensees in Nevada are doing, you know, the top business. It's like a very small portion of actual licensed agents are doing all the market share in Vegas.
Pretty much.
So it just goes to show you, you know, the other 18,500 agents are probably just helping one family or friend a year, and that's what they consider.
And that's why they aren't full time. That's why they have another job, because they sell 1 or 2 or 3 average priced homes. You know, $20,000-$30,000 a year isn't going to cut it
right
in 2024.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm curious. I know you guys started with one flip, right?
Yeah.
You have to walk before you can run. You have to see, you have to take the first step before you can see the whole staircase. Did you guys have the vision when you got into real estate flipping that you wanted to create this mecca flipping machine, or did it just kind of happen organically?
I think we started with being the best in mind. I got to be honest. I think we started with building something that was big. And I think it goes to show with our numbers too, because we started in 2016 with our first flip. That one went pretty well, so we bought 2 more immediately before the end of the year. So before
we sold that one, we already owned 3.
Right.
So we were convinced before even completing one that we were going to be
like, we're making this happen.
Yeah.
So we're at 3 in 2016. 2017, I think we did like 27.
Yeah.
And then in 2018, I think we did 72 that year.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we started adjusting our business in the way we buy, where
then we 2019, hired our first person.
Then we hired our first person. And Jesse, we did everything.
Yeah.
So we were in a little tiny office by ourselves. You know, I was a real estate agent. I was a realtor before we teamed up to start flipping. So I knew how to use the MLS.
Yes.
And that's why we still use the MLS today, is that's just what we learned. So I knew how to navigate the MLS. So I taught Jesse how to navigate the MLS. So we're in an office, you know, submitting offers all day, every day ourselves. Then when we got one, We're finding contractors and we're doing all the construction and all the design and all the project managing ourselves as well. And then we, of course, being agents, listed them ourselves and dealt with all the sales and process ourselves as well, which I think we're really happy we did that, because now when we bring people in to take these type of positions over, we've done it ourselves. You know, a lot of people just delegate out from the get-go. And I think in the long run, that could hurt your business, because if you don't know how to do it, how are you going to educate someone else how to do it and coach them on it? So we could say we've honestly gone through A to Z of flipping for 200 properties, 250 properties.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what makes you guys that good, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can't claim you ran a marathon when you started at mile 20.
Yeah.
You know, like being able to understand every component of the business because you live there, then you one, have the empathy, and two, you have the mentorship to be able to give people starting out because you've actually been there. I'm curious, because I think this is important for all people, whether you're scaling a flipping business, a solar business, a brick and mortar business. What was that transition from you guys from being the best at the ones finding the deals, negotiating the deals, you know, hiring the contractors, like the level on the ground work, to now managing, leading, scaling, and actually running a business? Because I feel like for most business owners, they're great at making pizza, but to actually create the pizza business where it's scalable and it works when they leave, that's the challenge.
Two different animals.
Yeah.
And ours was fully out of necessity. There was just a time period where we had gotten big enough to realize that we just can't do this. On a daily basis, we were coming in the office and going, it's not getting done.
Right. We cannot scale this business and do the volume we wanted to do with just us.
We were stuck. And so there was just a necessity point where it's like, we've got to delegate and we've got to hire somebody to take care of something, because we're not getting to everything that needs to be addressed every day. And so we hired an admin, basically, like our assistant, our TC, transaction coordinator, our admin, our right hand.
Yeah. And I think we've kind of hired an order of where do we make our money and where do we not make our money. So doing paperwork all day and being stuck on hours of paperwork a day or a week is a good example of where we don't make any money.
Yeah.
So that was our first hire.
Yeah.
Was our office controller, and she's developed very well.
She's still with us
from the start.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Right. And then we go into, you know, making offers is great, but we can't make the amount of offers we want to make, which we just talked about volume, and by the amount of we want to buy if we're running the entire business and only making a few offers a day or a week.
Yeah.
So we started hiring people to offer for us and bringing people, you know, other real estate agents in to make those offers for us.
Plus, by this time, we had either acquaintances or friends who were real estate agents who were like, what are you guys doing? Like, what's going on here? It's been 2 years. You guys have just created something out of nothing. Like, how are you doing all this? You got to tell me what you're doing. And so we had interest coming in, and we slowly realized, okay, well, let's turn that interest into a valuable position that we could use. We can help them, put them in a place where they can grow, make money, but also we need the help, like right now. And so that was the next one, acquisitions, is where we taught people how to sit and look and calculate and what's a good deal and what's not and what we want to buy and what we don't. And then that became one person, two person, to now an entire division where, you know, there's four or five people all on their own team with their own metrics running that division.
No, I love it. If you guys could give a starter pack, I guess, for flipping, because I think there's a lot of people listening to this that, again, are maybe stuck at a job they don't like. Maybe they're listening to all the podcasts. They're watching the videos. Maybe they have these big goals and dreams, but they're stuck at their 9-to-5 because they have responsibilities. Maybe they have kids. Maybe they have a mortgage, but they know they should be investing in real estate, probably more on the wholesale or flipping side to start getting some more active income.
Totally.
What would that starter pack look like? Are you on Zillow? Are you finding contractors? Like, what is that 1-to-5 step to get your first couple flips going, to get that confidence to hopefully scale to exit that part-time job that they're working?
Well, it's great because we teach people how to do this every week.
We sign up here for the course.
We literally teach hundreds of people that have never flipped a house, how to flip a house, their first house, especially when they're just they're brand new on how to do this. So starter pack is a cool way to put it, actually. But I like to think of flipping as a bar stool, a three-legged bar stool. And all of those legs need to support the business. Each one of them is equally as important as the next. It's money, it's contractors, and it's deals. If you get really good at finding deals, okay, great. That's one pillar that you have to have mastered. Whether you do it or you hire someone to do it, like we eventually did, you got to have that down. And so teaching them how to value things, how to look at, find the ARV of properties, use somebody's MLS or get a license yourself. It's really easy to do so that you can look at the best possible information and data to learn how to look at properties. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. Money would be the second one.
Yeah.
So there's ton. You can just Google hard money lender. Tons of hard money lenders that work with brand new investors, local people that still work with brand new investors. For someone to say, I'm brand new, I don't have any money to do this, is the worst excuse ever. There's money out there. All you have to do is go look for it.
It's amazing how thinking that you need money to get into this business and you need a lot of money to do it will stop you from doing it. And that's really what we educate on is money is so abundant out there for new investors and just first timers. It's unbelievable how many options they have and they just don't know about it. And that little mindset will stop them from starting. And we really try to educate them on how to find it and where to look for it, you know?
And we've grown and learned the industry and gotten to a place where we can flip $1 million house for like $2,000. It really, you can really invest with almost no money. I hate to say $0 because it's going to cost something, but very, very little money, which we can get into later on if you'd like. So that's number two is money. You have finding deals, money, and then contractors, construction in order to flip homes. You got to know what needs to be done, how much those things cost, and you got to be able to rely on somebody to do that for you in a time efficient, cost effective way. And so if you can go out and interview contractors and find one that you like and ask all the right questions and basically have somebody ready to go for you, and you can go to a lender and submit everything you need and get all approved and I'm ready to buy a house and take a loan, then you just start finding deals because you have the other pieces. And so those are the three things I usually tell them to do. Go get approved by a lender. Go find a contractor you want to use. And then sit down and get good at finding deals. As soon as you find one, you have money, you have a lender, and you have a contractor who's ready to do it. So that's kind of the introduction.
It's that easy.
Yeah.
No, I love it. And I like what you said, Landon, right? it's not a lack of resources. It's a lack of resourcefulness.
Yeah.
You know, it's just people aren't willing to get out of their own head. They have this scarcity about, like you said, losing money, trying something new. Like even myself, right? It took me till 2019 to buy my first property because I didn't know what escrow looked like. I didn't know how the down payment worked. I didn't know how to deal with the inspection and financing. And then when you get the first one, I'm like, boom, I can knock these out, you know, two, three times a year.
Oh, that's all this is?
And most of that stuff, people do it for you. Like when it comes to title and escrow and all that stuff, well, you got title who will walk you through all that, right? When it comes to financing, the lenders want, you know, what we teach people is like, for example, the lender we use is a big hard money lender, right? They're going to be your backbone on values. So if you have a deal that's really not a deal, right? The values just don't add up. Well, the lender's not going to lend on that. They're going to do their own appraisals. They're going to do their own underwriting on it. And they're going to come back and say, hey, we don't see what you're seeing at all. We don't feel comfortable investing in this. If we do, it's going to be at a really low rate, which probably won't work for that deal. And we still rely on our lenders to do that for us to an extent, right? Where it's like, if we get a really low value, we're going back to the team and going, hey guys, is there something we didn't see here that they're seeing and we're not, right? And then when it comes to construction, people are like, well, I don't know how to like do any construction or flip a house. Well, when you hire general contractors, the way we educate you on hiring, you're hiring someone who's a very legitimate contractor who knows how to do the work on the house. You don't have to know everything from top to bottom on how to rebuild a house to flip your first house. There's so many resources and there's a lot of people that will do it pretty much for you as long as you put the pieces in place.
Yeah, no, I love it. When it comes to knowing what increases what in terms of value, because, you know, thinking of myself, selfish question, I'm not a flipper, not a wholesaler. I really don't have too much desire because I have a full-time business that produces income. Mm-hmm. I'm more on the long-term wealth building over time side of it. But I've renovated 3 out of 5 of my houses. One, because I wanted to make it nicer for me. But during that process, the way that I think, and maybe it's because I'm Jewish, I don't know. But I'm like, how do I justify this purchase,
sure,
turning it into a long-term good investment.
Yeah.
So when I want to update the kitchen, I'm like, oh, what can I do in order to maximize the value of this house, to increase my net worth and potentially, you know, sell it one day? So what would the 2 to 3, 4 things be in a home that you feel like, whether you're looking to do a flip or you're just looking to renovate your home in order to maximize that long-term value?
Sure.
Yeah, there's really 3 main components to a house, or main rooms in a house, where we're going to spend the most money on the design and the most time on the design to bring value to the house, right? So we have the kitchen, we have the primary bath, and then we really have the main family room and sometimes the rear yard, depending on which one has more assets to it, such as a big yard with pool and spa. We're going to spend some more money out there because that's going to add a lot of value to the house. But we spend a lot of time in our kitchens and in our primary baths. Those are the 2 rooms that you want to focus on that are going to definitely bring you the most value on resale.
Yeah, and even if you're not flipping a house, if you're doing, you know, a pseudo flip where I buy it, I rent it for 20 years, and then I might want to exit or buy a new asset with that appreciation. Well, down the line, 20 years from now, when you get ready to sell it, this is still applicable.
Yep.
You know, okay, it's been lived in for 20 years, but I don't want to renovate the whole house. What do I go do to easily renovate, but also make it worth more in a very short amount of time without having to do the top to bottom rehab? And those are all the exact same things. The only other thing I can think of on top of that would be mechanicals in the house. There's a big difference between buying a house with 20-year-old water heater, AC unit, furnace, pool equipment versus a house that has all brand new mechanicals too. That has a lot of value in it too.
Yeah. So you guys are the experts on obviously value add, because it's something that you do for your business every single day. Your job is, how can I spend the least amount of money to get the most amount of value? And I think you dictate that when it comes to obviously renovation, but also where you're buying, location, et cetera.
Yeah.
When it comes to location versus potential newness of the house or the amenities within it, like, where is the value, do you guys feel like, specifically in Vegas, when it comes to, if I'm buying a home for an investment long term and I want to essentially protect myself and also take advantage of appreciation,
yeah,
what should I be looking for? Is it 80% location, 20% mechanics, or what is that ratio for you guys?
Sure. No, that's a fantastic question, because that's pretty much every home buyer.
Yeah.
Right. I want to live in a nice house, what I can afford, but also when I'm ready to sell it,
location matters.
I want to do well on it. You know, I want to sell it and make more money on it. Fantastic. Location does matter. And it's, without completely answering the question, this reminded me of something that we tell ourselves all the time that fits perfectly. Since we know Vegas so well, if you want to buy a new house, brand new house, it's not going to be in the middle of Vegas.
Sure.
It's going to be on the rim, on the outside, because that's where the new land is that a developer can buy. Not everybody wants to live on the edge of town, on this outskirt of town. They want to live in a mature area, a neighborhood near an older school, something like that. And so our business, generally, like what we tell people if we have to elevator pitch, like, what kind of flips, what do you guys do, is we provide new build quality in established neighborhoods. And so I think that's like the best bang for your buck in Vegas, is to go into an area that's developed, that's really nice, has all the amenities, shopping, grocery stores, everything conveniently close. But generally, those areas are a little bit older. And so we go do a full cosmetic remodel to this house where it is probably better than it was when it was originally built, now that we're done with it.
Yeah.
And we provide that new build quality in a mature neighborhood.
Yeah. And when you're looking to invest long term, you know, a lot of people want to buy these super low price point homes to turn into rentals, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what you're not going to get in those homes, at least here in Vegas, is big appreciation over the years on those properties. You know, so if I was to advise someone to buy rentals in Vegas, I'm going to tell them to go, you know, adjust their price point up to a little bit of a higher price point, because I think the location is going to matter more here than the price point. So if you're buying rentals, you're going to want to buy rentals in Green Valley and Southwest, yeah, near the new casino, or obviously up in Summerlin. You know, are you going to get $400,000 or under properties in those areas? Absolutely not. But you're going to get a lot of appreciation. You're going to get solid renters. And over time, your house is going to be kept in better condition and have more overall value down the line.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I think it's interesting, because I think people get conditioned, and I don't know if it's Grant Cardone or who it is, but cash flow, cash flow, cash flow, where people feel like they're going to get, you know, rich off of cash flow. And I bought into that. You know, my goal is, hey, how do I create freedom, right? In order to create freedom, it's a very simple formula, right? Your passive or recurring income compared to your overhead. Once you have enough recurring income that covers your overhead, your bare necessities, your financial nut, then essentially you go do whatever you want with whoever you want.
Yeah.
But as you guys know, and as people that get into real estate know, you're not making thousands of dollars on cash flow in most situations, especially if you're getting into the game. So my question is, how do you guys look at cash flow? Is it more of just protection to make sure that you can afford the property long term? And where is real wealth created? Is it on the appreciation? Is it on the depreciation? Is it on the debt pay down? What's your guys' take on the benefits of real estate?
I generally think, without looking at multifamily, just because we don't do that very much, it's all single family. When it comes to cash flow, it's like icing on the cake. It's like, if there is really good cash flow, great. I want to buy something that obviously does cash flow, but I'm not considering that the first or even second priority of purchasing this asset.
Yeah.
It's, can I buy it at a discount? So can I build in equity today just because I'm buying it? That's probably the number one, because I could buy a good asset anywhere if I can get a discount on it.
Yep.
And then the second thing would be like talking about those areas is like, where are these pockets of town going to be in 5 or 10 years? And I think buying in those specific areas, we've seen what's happened in the past 5 or 10 years, and it's just going to continue.
Yeah. So I think, you know, to answer the question specifically, I think the debt pay down on properties in good locations that will appreciate over time is where the wealth is built.
Right. Right.
I don't think it's going to be cash flow. I mean, you know, traditional rentals, they teach you like, if it could cash flow, what, $300 to $500 a month, it's a buy. Right.
Yeah.
But these properties aren't going to appreciate much that do that. And look at a lot of the people that are buying in the Midwest. And when we talk to them, it's like, they're only buying cash flow. They're buying no appreciation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when they're cash flowing $300 to $500 a month, you need a lot of those rentals to consider yourself financially free.
Right.
50 to 100 of them to really move the needle in your in an investor's life, right? But those are areas that they say, they admit, they know will have no appreciation.
And they're buying them for 90 grand. That $90,000 house in Ohio is only going to be worth 95,000 in 10 years. That's it.
You know, I think of a house like ours, because I think Jesse and I bought two great houses in two great areas at the perfect time.
Oh, yeah.
Where's it at?
So I'm in Southern Highlands, he's in Summerlin. And we both paid $400,000 for our homes back in 2017. Now, we have good rates on them. My mortgage is $2,500 a month. That house now is worth $750,000 to $800,000, mm-hmm, because it's in the area. It's already appreciated in 7 years now. Jesus, it's gone fast. 7 years now, almost doubled in value.
Yeah.
But also, if I wanted to go rent that out, I could rent that for $4,000 or $5,000 a month because of the area it's in. And that would really cash flow.
And so that's, I think, to your point, it's just over that average price point.
It's over that average price point. That traditional rental mindset price point of low price homes that will make you $300 a month. It's like, I just don't see that being a needle mover in our lives.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you 100%. When it comes to your guys' own personal properties, when it comes to, obviously, you're acquiring, you know, 10, 15 these properties a month, you're flipping most of them. What criteria do you need, or what determines for the ones that you hold yourself for long-term rentals?
Yeah. So, really good areas, obviously. We have a couple, and it's like, okay, this is obviously outskirts of Summerlin, like prime location. Also factored in is, where did we buy this? Is this a great discounted property that we purchased since that? Or the next one would be like, can we refinance this in the current climate environment that we're at? And if we do, are we looking at leaving a very low amount into the deal if we refinance? So essentially targeting like a BRRRR, but if we have to leave $5,000 or $10,000 in to a deal, that's not bad. We bought a rental for $5,000 or $10,000. So that's another factor too. If we can't refinance it, we're gonna leave $50,000 to $100,000 in the deal. I don't wanna do that. I'd much rather have that back and be able to redeploy that and use it somewhere else. So a couple different factors. Honestly, it's a little bit hard to do here in Las Vegas. That's why we don't have so many in Las Vegas.
I was going
to
say, we're having a hard time buying rentals right now because we don't see an incredible amount of value in buying them right this instance in this market, yeah. right? Like our focus right now in our business is just really heavy cash flow on the flip side, you know, really just stacking as much capital as we can on the flip side, you know, until we get to a point where we're going to really have to, we'll buy what we have to buy just for tax depreciation purposes, but we're not overbuying rentals right now just to pick up a bunch. That's just not our, that's not our business model right now.
Yeah.
We're really just flipping and make a lot of capital.
So to segue, when it comes to investing, mm-hmm. I always enjoy this question with real estate guys, because obviously real estate is a sector of investing. But that's your guys' full time. It's not just your investment strategy. It's also your active strategy.
Yeah.
What is your investing thesis, I guess your mindset as real estate investors? And are you diversifying into other things as well?
Yeah. So, you know, as investors right now, like I was saying, our business model right now is to, one, focus on one business. Because in the past, you know, we talked about owning a brokerage and doing too many things at once, which, you know, to the public eye looks great. To a business, isn't great. So our business right now is focusing on flipping houses, and we have goals with that, 120 properties a year. Now, right now, we're flipping higher price point homes, so our margins are a lot bigger. So we're talking about, you know, anywhere between hopefully $3 to $5 million a year in net profit as a business, to which we can start going and doing bigger deals, right? One of the biggest businesses that we're segueing into right now, which is going to be capital intensive, is building custom homes. So right now we're working on our first ground up spec home. It's going to be a 6,000 square foot home overlooking the entire Las Vegas Valley, that will build for somewhere around $4.5 million and resell for about $8 million. So custom homes is probably our next segue.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. When it comes to like a thesis for everything that we do, which really is flipping, the 90% of everything that we do is flipping, I'd say like our safety net almost, but our like our creed is to always deliver a fully turnkey renovated product. Now, I say that and that might be like, well, obviously you want to deliver a great product. But in the world of flipping, there are a lot of variations or extents of a flip. Like, I could go in and paint and carpet, and that's a flip. I could go in and just clean it, and that's a flip. I could just do countertops and just this one sink faucet, and that's a, there's so many different variations of a flip. For us, learning from mentors, but also experiencing this over a couple years, if we go into a competitive environment, let's say a low inventory environment, lots of activity, lots of competing from buyers to buy homes.
Like a seller's market.
Seller's market. We have a turnkey product. People are going to fight for that turnkey product and pay way more than they should because it's nicer than everything else. On the flip side, let's say inventory goes way up. Now it's hard to find a buyer. More of a buyer's market, right?
Yeah.
More of a buyer's
market.
Kind of
like the market we had the last year and a half.
Exactly.
Right?
You have options. It's hard to find a buyer for those homes. When they're looking at 20 homes in a given neighborhood, ours is the best. Ours is the nicest. It's the most upgraded. That's going to be the next one to sell because everyone wants to buy the nicest house that they can. And so we feel like that approach to flipping, that business model of flipping, helps us navigate and be successful in all kinds of real estate markets, which we can't control the markets. We just need to make sure we make money in whatever market we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps us do that.
Yeah, no, I love your answer to that. It was, yeah, we're going to double down on our business and our skill set and just continue to elevate versus mm-hmm. diversify. And I feel like that's what not enough people do. They start to make a little bit of success in whatever industry they're doing or whatever they're doing. And then they immediately start diversifying.
Yeah.
And they start looking for all these things
100%.
Versus instead of going so wide, you really just need to go deeper
go
in
deep,
what you're
not
doing. Because that's what got you there in the first place.
Yep.
Yeah, when we talk about that, you know, let's go into the brokerage side, right? Talk a little bit about a business that we made the decision to let go and take off our plates. And that was a business that we built for 5-6 years.
Like,
we loved that business. We loved our brokerage and loved having it. And we grew it organically and we had great people within it. But, you know, we were in a time where, one, the market was difficult last year, right, with where rates were. And we wanted to scale our flip business and deep dive into investing. And we had to sit back one day and say, look, We can't do ourselves a disjustice, nor the people that work within our companies a disjustice. For us to make the brokerage successful, we're going to have to dedicate another 10 to 15 hours a week at least to plug into the brokerage and make it more successful, yeah. right? Or we eliminate the brokerage entirely and take all of our dedicated time and put it towards our flip company as investors and be investors. And we had to think about that. And the decision was we got into the game to be investors. We live our lives off investing. That's where our time and focus has to go. As much as we didn't want to deal with the public facing image of the Boakley Group shut down and what happened to them, it was a failure and this and that. It wasn't a failure. We could have kept that going as long as we wanted to.
Yeah.
We made a very conscious decision to say, one, we're not going to dedicate time to our agents that they need to be successful. And two, we're taking away from our bread and butter business and our family's lives and everything else if we don't dedicate all of our time towards flipping. And, you know, we made that decision. And since we made that decision, our investment company has been incredibly successful. And the culture within has been incredibly changed. And everyone's super happy. So,
yeah, big difference between giving up and moving on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like there's a, in any person, especially entrepreneur, they have to come to a realization. And maybe that's intrinsically, maybe that's in the business where you either have to zig or zag. And I've even dealt with this before where from the outside looking in, you worry about other people's opinion. But in reality, it's like you're not giving up. You're not quitting. You're moving on. And that can sometimes mm-hmm. be a bit of a distinction, but very important. I want to pivot a little bit. I want to get inside your guys' minds. We don't have too much time left. So I think one thing that's unique about you guys, and obviously you leverage it in terms of your brand, but your guys' brand is brothers, right?
Yeah.
The Boakley brothers. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, how much of your success do you feel like has came from having each other as accountability buddies? Because I feel like a lot of people out there hustling, going after their dreams, they're lonely and they're by themselves.
Yeah.
And most brothers, siblings, aren't as in tuned on the same frequency as you guys or a few others out there. How much has that played into your success and how important it is to have someone by your side when you're building a business like this?
I think it's invaluable, really, honestly, especially to have people that are different. You know, I think growing up being a young guy who wanted to become an entrepreneur, you see other friends who are, you know, thinking the same thing, and they usually just go, this is my best friend. Like, we're going to do this together. And usually, like, you and your best friend, you like the same things. You do the same things.
Kind of the same mind.
You're the same person. Because, like, that's why you're friends.
Yeah.
Because you all like the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when two people are in charge of something that are essentially the same person, there's just no reason for it. You're both going to just say yes to the same thing. You're going to say no to the same thing. You're going to overlook the same mistakes. And you're going to make the same mistakes.
Mm.
So when it comes to starting a business, having two different perspectives, two different ideas, two different sets of eyes just to look at something has saved us countless times, improved our products probably better than we could alone or individually, because there's just a whole set of wants and styles and desires and a whole another set of things that we also need to apply, and we get the best of both of them. So it's been invaluable, to give you a short answer.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, obviously in the good times you have someone to celebrate with, and the bad times you have someone, you know, we're sitting there like, man, we got to change something. We got to make a change, and we're here doing it together, and we're in an office late at night, you know, strategizing and figuring things out. It's a lot harder to do that on your own.
Yeah.
You know, when we're coaching our students, we do try to tell them to find a partner that is the opposite, you know, and what Jesse's speaking about is our true personality traits. We have taken, you know, very high level personality tests, and we're quite opposite in terms of our personality traits. And I think that does drive the business forward quite a bit.
We were just sitting with a lender today. It's a great example.
Yeah.
Where Landon's like outward facing. You know, he's like, I'm thinking of this person. I'm going to call him. Like, oh, they could help us. I'm going to reach out to him. And so he like calls, talks to the person, talks to the contact, sets up a meeting with the contact. And then they come in the office and they're like, okay, so what is this exactly? Can you show me like a breakdown? And they show him a spreadsheet. And they're like, oh, this is beautiful. Can you send me this? And like, yeah, of course. Like, so he'll set this thing up, you know, tee us up for success. And then when it comes down to like, okay, well, how does this pencil, how does this actually look? What do you actually need? Or what do you guys look like on paper? Well, here you go. I can show you all that. Yeah. So it's a great compliment.
A maverick. So I'm like a maverick, right? I'm a driver.
Yep.
And Jesse's the integrator. So he's a little bit more logical in mind. I'm more of a, I don't care, let's just do it. He's more of the, hold on, let's make sure we're doing it right.
Yeah.
And that's where the success has come from.
Yeah, let's just call the guy. Well, what are we going to say to the guy?
Yeah.
That's exactly how we go.
Well, that's what makes a good team, right? Yeah. I think any super ultra successful company has that. They have that diversity in their leadership group because you need that objective perspective. Sure. And you also can't be yes men or no men to the same scenarios, right?
Yes.
You need that challenging. And I really like that.
Be honest, one of the hardest things to do in business is say no. The brokerage. We had to eventually realize, you know, we had to say no to spending time there. Some of the best deals that we've ever done are ones that we have not bought.
Mm-hmm.
We've said no to. So it's a hard skill. It's a learned skill.
When it comes to your guys' students, you know, mm-hmm. you guys have, you're part of the Wealthy Investor, and you have gone from doing to now teaching, coaching at a high level and still doing. Mm-hmm. When it comes to your guys' students and now taking that next step and being a coach, what traits do you see or what traits don't you see in the people that make that commitment, they take action and they crush it versus the ones that make that commitment and don't end up crushing it?
If I had to say one word, it's just consistency.
Yeah.
That's literally all it is. The people who show up week after week on the calls and ask questions week after week. And when we say go do something, they consistently go and execute. Those are the people that are now successful.
Yeah. I was going to say accountability, but same thing. People that participate, that are there every week, that actually read the thing and ask the questions. And they're the ones that experience success.
It's just consistency.
Yeah.
I think business is consistency. You know, you can't get in shape if you don't go to the gym consistently. You can't become wealthy if you don't read and study and learn and mentor and do things consistently. It's just, that's the name of the game. And nothing we do is brain damage at the end of the day, right? You know, we could teach you how to flip a house super easy because you're comparing a house against another house that's already sold at a certain price.
Yeah.
There's no magic behind it. It's just consistently doing it and trying to get better.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. There's a formula, right?
There's a formula.
That's it.
Yeah. I think most people, they either can't get out of their own way or they try and reinvent the wheel. I think the, you know, the old question when it comes to my business is, how do someone with the same skills, this maybe not the same skills, but the same environment, the same product, the same objections, the same area, the same tools, how does one person make $500K in a year and someone make $50,000 a year? And that's the question I try to solve, because as a coach and a mentor, similar to you guys, my job is to try and take what that $500,000 a year earner knows and inject that into the $50,000 a year earner. Because you'd hope that if you do what people do, you say what they say, they'll get what they get every single time. But I think you're right. I think people just aren't consistent. And if they are consistent, the consistency is actually hurting them because they're consistent in the wrong things.
Right.
They're consistent with being late. They're consistent with sleeping in. They're consistently not reading the books, right?
Yeah.
So I think that compound effect is either hurting you or helping you in all scenarios.
Agree.
Yeah, and I think, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, you have so many people to just literally copy. Like, as much as people don't want to be a copycat.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're getting on a call every week saying, we do this, you do it too. Like, if you do this and just copy us, now you will be successful. You'll be doing the same things we're doing, mm-hmm. which means you're going to grow and become more successful, right? And we've done the same things to our fathers and other mentors, Ryan Pineda and those guys, where it's like, just copy what the successful's doing.
Yeah.
And just mimic it in your own day. That's it.
100%. Last couple of questions here as we wind down. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. You guys have obviously been super successful at flipping for a really long time. You know, you flipped your first house in 2015. We're at 2023. You guys are still crushing it. Why did you start going online? What was the why behind creating content? Because I feel like I know the answer, and I ask a lot of different people this, because I think there's a lot of weight in being offline and super successful, but I think you reach a point where you're limited on your leverage and you're limited on your impact. So I'm curious, mm-hmm. why spend all this energy and time taking away from your primary business to create content and do the whole online thing?
I think it's pretty simple. I think it just boils down to watching Ryan Pineda, because we were doing the same thing. Ryan was flipping homes, had a flipping company and a brokerage. We were flipping homes, had a flipping company, and the same thing. And then in COVID, he was, you know, kind of shut down like everyone else was, in a sense where everything was closed. He still decided to run the business and invest.
Be consistent.
But also decided to take his free time and go online with it. And then ever since he did that, we just saw X, Y, and Z happen, come to him, you know, new opportunities, businesses, things happen, and also bigger investments in different types. It's like, okay, cool. To your point earlier, let's just copy that because we want to experience the same things. And we essentially like hired him as our coach to say, we want to go full bore on social media, YouTube channel, TikTok, Instagram. We want to do the same thing.
Teach me.
And we did the same thing he did, but we did it really consistently for like 2.5 years. And then it became something else. Like, we do get deals and different types of investments from it. We have a new cool new partner that we met to build a house with from it. But the majority of what we use it for today, I don't think we thought about using it for that back then.
Mm-mm.
Like, we wanted YouTube money. We wanted, like, I want to make revenue from ads. Right. Like, that would be cool.
We're going to be the next YouTube stars. Yeah, like, you know, and make 20 grand a month, like, you know, all these other guys that we started hanging out with.
That didn't happen.
Now we legitimately run almost our entire business off of social media in a way. When it comes to hiring, we hire the best people off social media because they watch you, they know you, they see our personalities, they see what we do on a daily basis. So instead of just, you know, pulling online applications, we post on Instagram, right? And we get the people who love us to reach out.
Yeah. Fundraising is the second one.
We've raised $4 million in the last year off of Instagram only.
From strangers. Just asking.
Unbelievable.
So this thing has become a tool now that when we need something, we just go ask for it.
That's it.
That's a very valuable tool now.
Yeah.
I mean, personal brand, right? It's like the modern day resumes.
That's it.
People don't know you unless you're out there showing who you are, and it creates that credibility, and then, you know, good things happen.
Yeah.
That's right.
Last question for you guys, and it's been awesome having you guys on. Definitely a wealth of knowledge on the real estate, but also your journeys have been inspiring. I guess the question is for both you guys. Landon, you can go first. If you could go back in time, back to when maybe you were 10, 12, 13 years old, knowing all the information you knew now, super stud, crushing it, goes to the gym, hundreds of flips, wearing an AP, living his best life.
13,
what advice?
Damn. Doing all this at 13.
13. What advice would you give your future self or your past self to help accelerate your happiness, your wealth, your fulfillment, your abundance, all the things?
Oh, man.
It's a loaded question.
Yeah, I don't know. I did some crazy stuff in college and all that, so I can't say, like, be a healthier person because I had some fun. But honestly, I think it just comes down to, you know, I had good mentors, so I can't say find a mentor. God, what a good question it is.
You want me to go first?
Because, yeah, go ahead.
I'll give you a minute.
Take it, Jesse. Right.
Random thing just came to me.
Yeah.
I would tell myself to do a little bit each day. I think when I was young, like around that age, I knew, like, I want to start my own business. Like, I want to do this. And I knew that I would do that in the future, but I didn't think that I should be working on that now. And so I think the power you have of compounding your knowledge, your skill set, your everything to start when you're 11 or 12, like just reading about something or just trying out elementary versions of something and getting, if you need to, like your parents involved or other people. Like, it's amazing what kids can do nowadays. There's kids that are 13 years old and own 5 rental homes. Like, where are they going to be when they're our age now? So I think going back would be like, hey, those things that you're thinking about, like, do a little bit today and just a little bit more tomorrow and just watch what happens, like, so much faster. I think obviously if we all did that and all our goals, we'd be way farther ahead. So I like that.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe for me, you know, I've never been a massive question asker. And I think that getting better at asking questions of how does that work? How can we do that? How do we make it? Who do we get to do that with us? How do we, you know, how does that work? How does that happen? If I would have done that sooner, I probably would have been a little bit further in my real estate career earlier on. In business and altogether, just not being afraid to now ask, like Jesse said. Now it's like, I pick up the phone. Hey, how do I do this? Hey, who do I go to for this? Like, now I've learned that there's, you know, getting a no or getting a rejection is not a big deal, right? It's like, I have no problem picking up the phone and asking people for help, asking people for things, like asking more questions and just not being afraid to do it.
You know, and now that we've always reserved, proven ourselves, like most often people are willing to help us.
It's that's the point behind it. Yeah. It's unbelievable how much and how many resources there are in the world.
Yeah.
If you just ask, right? If you're reserved and you try to do it yourself, well, it's a lot harder to do things on your own than to just get resources to help you do it, right?
Closed mouths don't get fed.
Yeah. The second part of that, if we have one more minute, the second part of that just comes from like a great book, Who Not How. Yeah. So like, I think as a young kid, spent so many times questioning, thinking about, how do I do this? How do I make something no one's seen before?
How am I going to get rich?
It's just who's doing what I want to be doing? Who's already made it? Who could help me get to that step? And if you just ask yourself those questions instead, like those are actually solvable questions. I can go find a person who could help me with this. And then all of a sudden I get the help I need.
Sound advice, especially in the 21st century where anyone is just literally the click of a button.
So accessible. Yeah. Like the knowledge and resources are so much more accessible now than ever.
Absolutely. You guys are studs.
Thanks, bro.
Appreciate it.
Where can the viewers find you if they want to get connected?
Yeah. So TikTok, Instagram, or YouTube at the Boakley Brothers, B-O-E-C-K-L-E, if you're wondering.
And it's Boakley again.
Boakley. If you guys, those are our three main social channels. You guys can always find us there, theboakleygroup.com too, the company website. But meaning Landon, is always in the DM, so you can DM us.
Hit me up.
Hey, he'll respond eventually. We'll get it done.
He's good.
You are. Guys, definitely reach out to these guys, especially in Vegas. If you're trying to learn about real estate, get connected, entrepreneurship, they will definitely take care of you. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you guys for coming on the show. I'm glad we finally got to make it happen.
Thanks for having us.
Dude, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. And we'll see you guys on next week's episode.
Cool.
Peace.